Accession number 29648
Real 1. Chris Johnson, Real 1. Chris, can you tell me when and where you were born, please?
I was born in Warwick in Leamington Spa in 1976.
And what did your father do for a living?
My dad used to be in the building. He used to underpin houses and put lay drains, things like that. My mum was a dinner lady at school.
So was there an engineering background in the family at all?
Not really as such, no. Like I said, my dad was in the building and I used to go out sometimes on a Saturday if he was working. I used to go with him and watch him, but I wouldn't have said he was an engineer specifically.
And given what you do now, did you have any sort of interest in aircraft at that age when you were younger?
No, surprisingly, I didn't. To be perfectly honest, when I applied for my job here, or at British Aerospace as it was then, back in 1992, it was really as an afterthought. I applied for college and also for a couple of apprenticeships, and I didn't actually know what the company did, although as stupid as that may sound. So it was, but as soon as I sort of got here, I just loved it. I love every minute of it. So
can you tell me something about your educational background? Taking it through from when you first went to school to the type of qualifications you got and how that's gone on into your working life.
When I was at, I did 9 GCSEs. I got all grades, varied from A to C on all 9 of them. Following that, I really wanted to do an apprenticeship, because once I'd found out what apprenticeships were and I'd found out that I really liked engineering, then I thought it was the best of both worlds, really, because you actually got to do a practical job, but also you got paid, and you still got to go to college. So for me, to go to college and have to pay for yourself and whatever was a bit of a, oh, why do that when I can actually go and get a job and still do that? So some of the courses that I actually did sponsored through the company were actually the courses that I'd applied to go and do full-time.
And where had you got this interest in engineering from?
I actually did a week's work experience in my final year at school. It was around sort of October, November. We got asked if we'd like to do a week's work experience at a local engineering company. And the only reason why I said yes, really, was because it was another week off school. And because I didn't know what engineering was at the time. One of my teachers asked me if I wanted to do electrical or mechanical, and I said I wasn't, because I didn't know the difference. She goes, oh, we'll put you down for electrical then. And it was really that week's work experience that I thought, oh god, I loved it. All we did is we had a bit of a crash course in electronics, like this is a resistor, capacitor, and we assembled some components on a printed circuit board, and I made a 24 chime doorbell, which still works, and it's at my mum's house. And it was that I just sat there and I thought, something just clicked, and I just really thought I could do this for a living, and so that's what motivated me to go for an apprenticeship.
So take me on a little bit, how did you apply for your apprenticeship?
At the time you sent off a little slip of paper. It was just like with your name and address and whatever, and then you got sent an application form, filled in the application form, sent that off. Oh, and you also did, then you got invited to do a series of tests. I think it was only about a day, something like that, when I applied. And it was like your basic English and maths sort of papers. Did those, and you got assessed on your application form, and then assessed on how you did in the tests. And then if you reached a certain standard, then they'd select people for interviews. I was fortunate enough to get selected for an interview. Once they narrowed it down again, and for people that they thought was possible, you then got sent through for a medical, which was basically just to make sure that, you know, you, things like it looked at whether you was colour blind, test your hearing, things like that. It wasn't anything strenuous, or it was just to assess your senses and your ability and your hearing, things like that. So it was pretty much quite an easy medical. So it wasn't anything strenuous. And then you just sort of sat and wait. And then after a few weeks, I hadn't heard anything, so I gave him a ring and said, oh, I've come from medical a couple of weeks or a few weeks ago. I was just wondering what the status was, and they offered me a job over the phone.
So is that was the stage where you were still not quite sure what the company did, were you?
To be honest, I can't remember at that stage. I think I knew they, by that point, I knew that they built aircraft, but nothing specifically. I didn't know what the types of aircraft were or anything like that. Really, I just wanted, I wanted to do an electrical apprenticeship.
So what's the next step? You've got your job placement. Tell me about the apprenticeship as you started. What was the first thing that you had to do as you arrived?
The first 12 months I spent doing, or the first 6 months, sorry, I spent doing quite a broad based. It's to give you a taster. It's also for them to assess you, and also for us to get a bit of an idea of the different types of trades that you could have done if you became craft, because there was two types of apprenticeship. There was craft and technical, but initially everyone started off as craft. So you did some fitting, which is basically filing, riveting, things like that, some machining on big CNC machines, tool making, which is using a lathe, did some electrical work, doing circuits and generating looms and doing like housing electrics, wiring up housing electric circuits. And we also did some sheet metal work, so made things like a toolbox and a paint can, things like that.
How did you take to that?
It was really good. There were some bits, obviously, I really wanted to do the electrical side, so I had my mind set on what I wanted to do before I joined the company. But the rest of it, I really liked all of it, to be honest. There weren't any particular bits that I would say, I really hated that. Or there are bits that I'd probably say I'd preferences of which jobs I'd rather have done. Like, I wouldn't have fancied being a machinist, because at that point, by the time I'd joined and I knew it was an aircraft company, the only way you could actually... joined and it's like, well, I want to work on the aeroplanes. You know, to me, to work in an aircraft company and work on a machine all day manufacturing parts that could be for anything, it wasn't, you know, I wanted, no, I want to work on the jets. Yeah, so the only trade that you could do whereby you ended up working on the aircraft was either an electrician or a fitter. So they were the sort of two that really I wanted to, it was an either one of those, because I wanted to work on the aeroplanes.
And how were you organised in that first 12 months as apprentices? Were you all in one group, or did you go off to different areas?
No, it was in groups of about 10, I think. I think there was 4 10s and a 9, because there was 49 of us that started. I can't remember. I think it was about... No, it wouldn't have been. Maybe about 6-8 weeks you spent on each section. And then at the end of that, once you'd covered the 5 areas, you then got... they assessed you, and then they gave you a choice. So you could put your preference of what trade you wanted to be. And then depending on what they thought of your ability and how well you'd done in different areas would then depend on what you actually got. So I picked electrical. Because I'd done quite well on all the different sections, I actually got my first choice, so I became an electrician.
And you say you were assessed. Were you assessed throughout the period you were on each of these different sort of jobs?
Yeah, you got every job that you did. It was not just, say, whilst you was on the fitting section, you might have got 3 or 4 little projects to work on during your time on the section, and then it would be based on the quality of your work. So is it, we made a little clamp, tap wrench clamp, I think they're called, a long time ago. And so you made those. And then, so you had to be within a specific, you know, plus or minus 5 thou or whatever the dimensions were. And then, so everything got measured, and you got graded against how good, bad, or indifferent it was against each item that you made.
And how were you receiving instruction at these different levels? Was there somebody with you for that specific?
Yeah, you had an instructor, again, that would take you through the steps of what you needed to do and show you sort of how to use an engineering blue and engineering block and a micrometer and vernier height gauge and vernier calipers and all those sorts of things. There was like people would show you how to do it, and then and be sort of left to, not left to your own, but obviously with under supervision, but you just got on with it, and then you got assessed on how well you did.
And would they monitor you through the process of doing
Yeah, there'd be set sort of stages where they do like checks on where you were up to and things like that.
And you said that obviously that period, was that really to give you an idea of what the company does or what trade you could work within?
A bit of both, really, because whenever the apprenticeships, or that's how it used to work, whenever they took on so many, they'd take on so many apprentices, and they'd know, they'd say, right, okay, well, in 4 years we'll need so many fitters, so many electricians, so many toolmakers, so many machinists. And so it's to enable you to get a flavour of what each of those skills were, but also to enable them to put the right people in the right jobs. So if he was exceptional at fitting and whatever, then, you know, they'd say, well, actually, no, even if it wasn't necessarily your first choice of job, they might think because you were so, you had an aptitude for it, that they'd put you in that position.
And you obviously got what you wanted.
I did,
so
yes.
What was the next stage for you after the 12 months and you got your choice?
Well, then you sort of specialised for the last sort of 4 months of your first 12 months. You sort of then go, once you know what trade you're going to be, you then sort of go off and start learning how to be an electrician. And then after once the first 12 months have finished, you then actually, you'll go onto the shop floor. And so you work with people actually on the aircraft or in workshops, because there are electrical workshops as well. It's not just all working on the aircraft.
And when you do that, do you still have sort of, I was going to say the word sponsor, do you have somebody who looks after, a mentor, who
yes,
looks after you throughout that
you
period?
You tend to be placed with the supervisors on the shop floor will tend to place you with a skilled craftsman, and then you'll go and you'll work with, I say craftsman, craftsperson. and then you'll go and work with those. Sometimes you get moved around, depending, you know, to if there's, like, if you're on a production line, rather than leave you spend 3 months on in each area, rather than leave you for 3 months in one area, just to give you a bit of an idea of the variety of jobs you can do as an electrician on a production line, because it's not just one specific job, there's quite a few different elements to it. You could get moved around.
Can you explain a little bit more to me about that? Because obviously as you started to specialise as an electrician, what type of work were you doing as you went into that kind of second year?
Right, well, first you've got loom workshops where you've got all the cables that go into an aircraft to make all the black boxes work, and they have to be put together. So you've got workshops at Salmsbury that actually do some of that work. So you could get placed in there, which we were for about 6 months. So you got to know how to make ends off the ends of cables, because there's, depending on what type of cable it is, whether it's coax or whether it's just like got twin core, if you were, then there's different methods, and some are shielded to field off interference and whatever. So there's different processes and procedures to make off different cable, so you learn all things like that. And there's different types of connectors, you've got angle depending on where they fit in the on the aircraft, or straight, it could be a straight plug, or it could be like an angle connector. So there's different procedures to do that, and different crimping tools, different stripping tools, from a knife to actually quite a complex little tool for stripping cables. And then through to then, once those looms have been manufactured, they actually need to be put onto the actual aircraft. So then there's like routing and clipping, so you put all the wires in, and you know that it goes from maybe the tip to where the engines are, so you'd have to then put the cable through, or the completed loom through, and clip it all up and make sure that it was, you'd have like wooden blocks which represented the equipment, so you knew how much length to leave in order to get access to the equipment. And
would you work to a plan doing something like that?
Yeah, there's a specific set of drawings which tell you where each, because a loom could have hundreds of connectors literally coming from, dropping down from a loom, so there's a lot of what we call breakout points. So you'd have to go through and you need to look on the drawings, right, connector 100 VP or whatever it was called, needs to be between that frame and that frame on the aircraft. So you'd have to assess all the drawings and where things needed to be, and then you'd put those in.
It's quite a complex thing to master at first.
Yeah, it is. It is quite. It's just even learning drawing sets, because obviously in three dimensions and things, it is something that you need to get experience doing. It's not. And routing and clipping sounds. Might you think, well, that doesn't sound too bad. But it's an art form in itself, and because if you imagine, if you go and buy something, when you go and buy a car, if you had wires hanging everywhere, you're thinking, hang on a minute, I'm paying how many thousand pounds? You've got wires coming out here, there, and everywhere. You know, it's got to look the bit. You know, some of the guys that do it for a little, that it's, you can follow a wire straight down from one end to the other, and you can actually see. You know, it's like a straight. You wouldn't think it was a wire. And they're absolutely exceptional at what they do, and the skill that's involved in actually putting them in is.
It's that important, obviously, with something that's produced like a complex piece of machinery like an aircraft, that neatness is kind of instilled into you at that early stage, really.
It is, because it's not just for, because obviously visually it looks a lot better, and if you're paying so many millions of pounds for an aircraft, you want to open up the access panels, and like I say, you want to see everything neat and tidy. It's about the quality of the product, but also just if you take it from a pure practical point of view, if you're doing maintenance on the aircraft and you happen to go through a core and cut a core, then if that core is weaved in and out of a loom, you're going to have a really hard time. I mean, it's hard enough trying to replace cores as it is if you do damage them, I know, because through experience, unfortunately. But if you do damage a core or whatever, then it is a really hard job pulling a new core in or a new wire in. So if everything's neat and tidy and you can actually see it, then it makes any sort of additional maintenance or whatever a hell of a lot easier in the long term.
And was it helpful, obviously, working with people who'd had an awful lot of experience working?
Yes, yeah, definitely, because it sort of it showed you what was expected. You know, at the end of the day, we're working on aircraft. I've worked on military, but whether it's military or civil, you know, these are things that from a pure safety perspective, you're flying over people's homes and whatever, and everything needs to be right. You know, you can't afford to have things go, you know, any mistakes or.
So you're very aware of the responsibility that you all have when you're putting something together?
Yeah, definitely.
What aircraft were you working on during that period of your apprenticeship?
Different one. I've worked on Hawk. I've worked on Tornado, new build, and also the GR4 upgrade. Worked on the development GR4s, and I've also worked on Typhoon, although not as much on the aircraft, because when I worked on Typhoon, it was going back before it had even flown, so it was more sort of the loom work, and it was still being assembled when I worked on it as an apprentice. So I worked on quite a.
When you were working on the Hawk or the Tornado, were there any particular problems you faced with the electrical work on either of those, or were they well designed in the sense of you were able to do your job quite easily? Was it accessible? Was the were the plans good? Did it work, or were there problems?
I think the main, because obviously the aircraft are quite small, so it's not always. Things that you do aren't always in the most accessible areas, and then there's sort of times where I've been upside down in cockpits, and so it's, some jobs are and there's what's called zone 19 on a Tornado is very small, and it's in the middle of the aircraft, or the end of the front fuse, and there was certain components that's that you, if you needed to change and you had to go up there, it was like how you come up with tie wraps, which you used to hold the cables together with tie wraps cuts and all over your arms. So it was quite interesting sometimes in the spaces that you could actually fit into.
When you have something like that, do you have any specially adapted tools to work in specific? I'm thinking specifically tight environments or environments.
You do to an extent. There's lots of different angled, like for screws and things. You've got screwdrivers, but then you've got like your angled screwdrivers. Or you like socket sets and things like that you can use, but there is an element of sort of specialist tools, but sometimes things are just, it's really just get your hands in and trying to do your best.
And how are you taking to that, obviously, in the apprenticeship? Was it something that you were really enjoying, or was it something that there were elements you didn't enjoy?
No, I loved it. I really loved all the whole, I think my apprenticeship was really good, and I really enjoyed all the...
At the same time, obviously, you were carrying on with your education, weren't you?
Yep.
What did that entail?
I did part-time BTEC Ordinary National Certificate in Electrical Electronic Engineering. That was done over a couple of years. And then I did a BTEC Higher National Certificate in Electrical Electronic Engineering. Again, that was done over a couple of years. Did that during my apprenticeship.
So did you have... what, a day release?
Yeah, thing? Sorry, yeah, it was done day release. My ordinary national certificate I did at Preston College, and my higher national certificate we did at the University of Central Lancashire.
And how confident were you coming with your apprenticeship? As you said, you loved what you were doing, but were you confident in the work that you were doing?
What with the...
Just how you know, were you happy that that was progressing and that you were enjoying doing what you were doing, and that you were feeling the skill, your skills were... you were gaining skills?
Yeah, certainly, because it's quite difficult because you move on every 3 months, and the idea of your apprenticeship is that you go into different areas every 3 months, so it's not just like leave one area, do the same job but just slightly different on a, so where possible they try to vary the actual places where you did go within the different departments. But certainly towards the end, after a couple of months, it's quite sad really to leave each area, because you just get, you know, it's like you spend a couple of months getting into it and learning what to do, and you know, and they've obviously the person that you're working alongside for the first few weeks is going to be watching you like a hawk, because they're sort of supervising you and they're signing for all the work that you do. So they're sort of watching you like a hawk all the time for the first few weeks, and then once, it's like any relationship, it starts to build, and then they get to know you and your capability, and then eventually sort of towards the end of the 3 months, you know, you're off, oh, can you just go and do this for us? And you know, so you do get quite a good bond with the people that you work with. And
are the benefits to that you've noticed in your working life later on, obviously meeting all these people and moving around, has that benefited in your later work?
Definitely. If nothing else, you've got that. If you need to know anything, or if you've got any problems or whatever, you can always go, you build up sort of a really good network of contacts as an apprentice, because you do move around so much. And there's always, I mean, it's been 11 years now since I finished my apprenticeship. And you know, there's still people that I see from some of the first areas that I work on that all still know who I am. And, you know, I still know, and you can, certainly all the people that you know that have made a good impact, you know, you think, God, they were really good and that you had a lot of respect for, you tend to remember who those people are. And so that if you ever do need anything in the future, you know exactly people to go and speak to. So it's good from a networking perspective.
So what happened when you came to the end of your apprenticeship?
At the end of my apprenticeship, I requested if I could go over to our development hangar, which is where they had the development tornadoes and GR4s. And I was lucky enough to get the opportunity to go over there on sort of a trial basis. So I went over there, and just to see if it was everything that I thought it was going to be, and just to see and see whether they liked me. And then I spent a couple of weeks over there and absolutely loved every minute of it. And I was like, please, can I have a job? and they said yes. So I came out of my time as an electrician, working on development tornadoes.
What did that involve?
The good thing about development is that on a production line, because you will do a job and you will do that job on sort of every aircraft until maybe you either you can move, or perhaps you get that production line's finished, so you move on to a different project, like go from Tornado to Harrier or to Hawk or whatever. But the good thing that I really enjoyed about development is that although you may be working on a tornado, but because it's development, any new installation, so any new systems that they want to put on the aircraft, you're actually doing all the installation work. So you see a job from start to finish. So you start off with the drawings, right, where do the wires, you know. So rather than just doing installing wires as your day job, you do that bit, but then you get to do some of the systems test. So you then put the equipment in, you put the wires in, you put the equipment in afterwards. Then you get to, if not do the carry out the systems test yourself, it's still involved in it, working with the what's called P&D test. They might do some of the actual physical systems test, but you can still get involved in it and still learn about what the system is just by asking questions and, you know, interfering. And then once the system's been tested, you actually then go and see it off for flight. So you get the air crew coming out to the aircraft, signing, accepting the aircraft and taking it up, flight testing it, coming back, and then, you know, how did it go? Was it good, bad or indifferent? And then so you get to see the whole job from start to finish, as opposed to just a small element of it, which is what sometimes it can be like working on production.
Is that where the satisfaction comes from?
Yeah, I think so. And certainly working on an aircraft it's going off to fly. All right, it might be on a pause for a few months while you install some of the new equipment, but you know at the end of that 6 month period or however long it takes that it's going to go and fly, and you're going to get, you know, it's a real, it's something tangible.
And what were they developing on the Tornado while you were over there?
Various different things, really. There was putting like GPS systems on it. There was upgrading some of the equipment because the Tornado has obviously been in around since, I think, first one was delivered in 1980, something like that. So, you know, so some of the equipment, that there was putting new displays, so rather than have, it used to have a display in the front cockpit, it used to be a film. It was a map, but it was actually on a roll of film. Or they put in a new digital one. So they had new digital displays. I think new radios are put in. So there's quite a few different, because it had been in service for about 13, 14 years, they was going through and upgrading it.
And were there any problems with the new things that were installed, or was it a fairly straightforward process at that time?
From an installation perspective, it was pretty straightforward. From some of the system point of view, I think you go through a development cycle. So like the first, for, you know, software, it's like you try it, see it, does it work quite right now, and do a few tweaks and whatever. But there was nothing, there was no sort of major issue. It used to go quite smoothly from what I can